शान्ति शान्ति ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
Sutta Goswami then said, O Shaunaka, I shall now begin to recite this great epic history, just as I heard it from the lips of Vaishampayana. There once was a king of the Paurava dynasty named Vasu, who was very virtuous, except that he was addicted to hunting. And, means that there's different vices that are there. So there's 10 vices that arise from the enjoyment. And so the first on that list is hunting, like that. So the king should avoid getting overly attached to these things, right? So hunting's one of them. They have to do hunting, but they can't get overly attached to it, because it always gives trouble, right? Pandu, it gave trouble. Dasarat, it gave trouble, like that. So it's that's these examples of why one shouldn't get too attached to hunting. Under the order of King Indra, Vasu conquered the Chedi kingdom. Then, later on, he renounced the use of weapons and retired to the forest to live a life of penance. However, Indra thought that Vasu was executing austerities in the hopes of someday occupying his heavenly post. With the intention of deviating Vasu from his ascetic life, Indra approached him, followed by all the demigods. As the ruler of the Chedi stood before him with folded hands, Indra said, My dear friend Vasu, it would be better for you to execute your duties as a king and give protection to the citizens. Rest assured that by acting in this way, you shall attain an exalted destination after death. Vasu agreed to resume his royal duties, and Indra was so pleased with him that he gave him a crystal chariot that traveled through the sky. Right, crystal means it looks like glass, so you can't see. You know, you could look down, you could look. People just see him flying, they won't see the chariot. Thus, by Indra's mercy, Vasu enjoyed the privilege of being the only mortal with a physical body capable of riding in a celestial chariot. In addition, Indra presented Vasu with a garland of unfading lotus flowers that, when worn, ensured that he could not be injured in battle. Finally, Indra gave Vasu a bamboo pole for ruling over the citizens. After 1 year had passed, Vasu planted this pole in the ground and then used it for worshipping Indra, to commemorate the benediction he had received from the King of Heaven. Ever since then, people have followed Vasu's example, and thus they are seen to place a pole in the ground while worshipping King Indra. Indra was very pleased with Vasu's worship, and so he assumed the form of a swan, and personally came to accept the king's offerings. Thus, by the mercy of Indra, Maharaj Vasu became so powerful that he was able to rule the entire earth from his capital within the kingdom of Chedi. Later on, when Vasu, who was also known as Uparichara, because of his ability to fly in the sky, would ride in his crystal chariot through the higher regions of the universe, Gandharvas and Apsaras used to accompany him. There was a river named Suptimati that flowed near Vasu's capital. A mountain named Kolahala once attacked Suptimati after becoming overwhelmed with lust upon seeing her. Vasu happened to witness this crime. The king violently kicked the mountain, which then released Suptimati from his embrace and fled. Still, as a result of her connection with Kolahala, Suptimati gave birth to twins. Out of gratitude, she delivered them to Maharaj Vasu, and the king accepted them. Later on, Vasu made the boy his commander-in-chief, and then married the girl, who was named Girika. Once, later on, when her time for conception arrived, Girika eagerly presented herself before her husband. However, it so happened that Vasu's forefathers had approached him and requested that he go to the forest to procure some deer for offering in the Shraddha ceremony. Vasu had to obey the Pitris, but as he was hunting in the forest, his mind was filled with thoughts of his beautiful wife. It was spring, and so the forest was filled with flowering trees, making it appear just like a heavenly garden. The air carried fragrant breezes that gradually aroused within the king an ardent desire for enjoyment with his wife. In this condition, Maharaj Vasu sat down beneath a large Ashok tree, and being aroused, he thought longingly of his beloved wife, Girika. At this time, the king happened to see a swift hawk resting nearby, and so he requested the bird, "Please carry my seed to my wife, the queen, for a time for conception has arrived." The hawk agreed to perform this service for the king. However, as it was flying through the sky, another hawk swooped down to attack, thinking that it was carrying some meat in its claws. During the fight that followed, the king's semen fell into the Jamuna River below and was immediately swallowed by a female fish. This fish was actually the Apsara Adrika, who had been cursed by a Brahmin. Then after 10 months, the fish was caught by a fisherman. When her body was cut open, two human babies, a male and a female, emerged from her stomach. As preordained by the Brahmin that had cursed her, the Apsara was immediately released from the curse. The astonished fisherman then took the twins and presented them to the king. Maharaj Vasu decided to keep the male child, who later on became the pious king Matsya. Vasu returned the female child to the fisherman, who then decided to raise her as his own daughter. This girl was named Satyavati. Okay? And then she grew up, she came to possess striking beauty and a highly virtuous character. However, due to contact with the father, the fisherman, Satyavati's body always had a strong fishy odor. Right? So it was, one would think that it's there, but she was Kshatriya, very high grade. So that's why then it wasn't a problem for Shantanu to marry her, because he was a Kshatriya, she was also a Kshatriya. Under her father's order, Satyavati used to ply a ferry across the river. One day, the great sage Parashara happened to come to the shore of the Jamuna. When he saw Satyavati with her wonderful beauty and chanting sweet smiles, the Rishi became overcome with a strong desire to enjoy with her. Parashara engaged Satyavati to take him across the river. Then, when they were midstream, he said, "My dear lovely girl, I've been captivated by you, and so please accept my loving embraces." Greatly embarrassed, Satyavati replied, "Foremost of rishis, there are many great sages residing by the side of the river. How can I dare to gratify your desire within everyone's view?" Upon hearing this, Parasara immediately created a dense fog so that the whole area became shrouded in darkness. When he once again petitioned Satyavati, she replied, "I am an unmarried girl who is living under the protection of my father. If you spoil my virginity, how can I dare return home?" Parasara then said, "O beautiful one, even after contact with me, you shall remain a virgin. I promise you this, and if you accept me, you can ask for another benediction as well." Being pleased, Satyavati requested, "From this time on, let my body emit an enchanting sweet smell instead of its present fishy odor." Parasara gladly granted this boon, and at the very moment he went to embrace Satyavati, her time for conception arrived. Thereafter, when his desire was satisfied, Parasara departed, and on that very day, on an island in the middle of the Jamuna, Satyavati gave birth to a glorious son. That very day, the child grew up, and since his mind was already fixed on living a life of austerity, he told Satyavati, "My dear mother, please grant me permission to depart for the forest. Rest assured that I will return whenever you need me." Because the son of Parasara was born in the island, he was given the name of Dwaipayana. And because he later on became the compiler of the Vedas, he also received the name Vyas. After her contact with Parashara, Satyavati began to emit a sweet scent, and thus she became known as Gandhavati. Gandha means smell, fragrance. Because that scent could be perceived from a distance of one yojana, she also became known as Yojana Gandha. Yojan means 8 miles. Yeah, so it's big. Or let's say 12 kilometers if you don't know miles.
Well, actually, it seems to be that there was a kind of not so nice actually the mood behind that whole story that how Vyasa was conceived. But I have another story. I know where that comes from. That actually, what happened when Parashara was a great astrologer and he saw that the stars, the constellations, were such a position that no special person is supposed to be born, and the person is supposed to be the compiler of the Vedas, who is saved basically the Vedas to the next yuga basically.
Mm-hmm.
So then he saw all those things, and then because nobody asked us there, only they two. So then he took that position. That's what I heard. So in that case, he was a bit different mood was there.
Well, see, the point is that would probably be explained in something else, in a Purana or something else. So we have to remember, Mahabharata said it specifically for women and, how do you say it? Dvijabandhus, like that. Mentioned also. Later, yeah, women shudras and Dvijabandhus. So if you give that kind of story, it's not going to be exciting for them. If you just talk about desire and fighting and this and that, then it's more attractive, then there's an interest. Otherwise, then the interest may not be very, very much. You know? Because then, you know, it's septic and this, and there's no emotion involved in that. So then they're not going to be so involved, so impressed by it. So the idea is it has to, from any story, there may be so many things, aspects of it. So what is being told in Mahabharata isn't wrong. But it'll emphasize certain aspects of the story than another. Just like, let's say, it's time for prasadam. You know, and so then you just go to prasadam. So if we just say, it was time for prasadam and then he went there, then, you know, then it may not be, you know, it's just ordinary. But if we say he was very, very hungry, and then he went and he asked the other boys, is there anything to eat? And they said, yes, now it's time for prasadam. Then he went there, then he ate. You know, it takes on a whole different flavor. You know what I'm saying? Like that, you know. So those elements of the story that would be more attractive to these people, those would be the angle through which then, you know, superior knowledge and transcendental knowledge will be given. Because if you have your attention on one thing, then you can give something else. You know what I'm saying? Because if you just go and it means, in other words, all the points that want to be made in here, then you could probably condense them together and it wouldn't be that great volume of work. You know, it would just be like all the essences of the Vedas. But then, who would read that other than people who are already reading the Vedas? Like that. So the idea is to get everybody to get benefit from the Veda. Does that make sense? So that's the point. So then the difficulty comes is that to do that, then you must, you know, how you say? Present it from that way, you know? Does that make sense? Like that. So, even though you're telling all the facts, sometimes you drop out some facts that would give it a different flavor. So then, because you drop out some facts, you know, it's just like, let's say, the boy comes up and goes, he hit me! It's a whole, that gives one whole idea. Then you ask the other boy, why did you hit him? He hit me first! But that was left out of it. If he had come up to you and says, I went to him, I hit him, and then he hit me back. Why did he hit me back? Then you'd say, well, why did you hit him in the first place? So it wouldn't get anywhere. So he just comes up, leaves out. It's not false that the boy hit him. But he doesn't tell all the facts. So therefore it takes on a different thing. So if you say, hit him, oh, immediately, oh, what's going on, this is that, you know, it takes on more of a emotional kind of thing. But if you come up and say, he did this, and even though I was wrong because of my false ego, I got upset, so I hit him, and he hit me back. You know, so could you chastise him for hitting me? Right? You understand? It wouldn't work. But if I come and just say, I was just sitting there, and then he hit me, you know, why, you know, this is nonsense. He was just sitting there after he had already hit him, the other boy. You know what I'm saying? So that's how it works, is that you may not lie, but you don't tell all the facts, so that it changes the situation. So Mahabharata will tend in sometimes to be like that. You know? So it'll overemphasize or bring out more detail in one area and less detail in another. Does that make sense?
There's another aspect in here that people who read like that, then they might have the idea that only by love they can have good children like Vyasa. So.
No, but here is Parasura Muni. This is a different age. You know, so the Gandharva rite could be used because you had somebody of such good character and a girl of such good character that if they're going to conceive a child, they're in the proper consciousness. It's not sense gratification. you know, like that, or the Prajapatis. But that's the main thing. But in the Kali Yuga, the Gandhara marriage is not allowed because the people don't have the quality for that. Does that make sense? You know, so it has to be, you know, properly arranged and this and that. It can't happen on the moment, you know, based on desire, because nowadays the desire isn't connected necessarily with good qualities. So in Kali Yuga, the Gandhara rite is not allowed. You know, it's popular, you know, but I'm saying it's not at all recommended. Yes.
What would this point teach us? I don't understand. I mean, why would he put it in there? The way that Vaishnava said it, that would teach you something, but this way it wouldn't.
Yeah. It gives a history behind, so you know, because people want to know what's behind. See, the difficulty is, you know, it may be not worth our while to go through this shortened form of it. Because in the bigger one, then you get more detail, so it's much more easy to bring out some things. Some things you could come out here is maybe he's not trying to bring this out point. He'll bring that out somewhere else. So here you could say, okay, one, Satyavati, he's asking, you please, you know, interact with me intimately. The girl says there's so many sages here. Right? So that's a very important lesson, is that man and woman don't act in an intimate way in public. Okay? Does that make sense? Though you even see it in our own part. They don't know these things. You know? Like that. You don't do anything that would be considered in that kind of mood. You know, you wouldn't hold hands or do this or that. You're just not done in public. So a girl who's actually shy wouldn't be able to do that. Does that make sense? So that's one of the good qualities. So she can do it in public. She's not shy enough. So better not to get involved. Does that make sense? Two is that, you know, before she's unmarried, so to lose her virginity before marriage, then you get an inferior son. Right? Like that. So that's another thing, because then that drops it down into even just kinsmen, they're not even heirs. Right? An heir means he takes the estate of the father. A kinsman means he's a relative of the father, he's not actually an heir. Right? So a girl who when she's married, that son comes with her, either before marriage, you know, that means born secretly in the house, or Sahoda means born with the child. You know, that means, so that puts aside that thing that they say if the girl's pregnant, when you get married, you marry the child also. But no, that son's called Sahoda, so you don't marry the child. You know, it's just something that they're trying to make it look more worse. So then that's not proper, right? Another is it's daytime, so otherwise why would that time, other than astrologically that's the right time, because nighttime is the only time you can conceive children, not day. So he's shrouded in darkness, so then it becomes dark, right? And it's covered from view, right? And she's under the protection of father. She spoils the virginity, he'll keep the virginity intact. So technically then it goes out of all these. Same with Kunti. Even though she's had the child before marriage, it goes out of that system. Right? Because she's still a virgin. So then technically it's like she's not had a child. Right? Does that make sense? Because a girl has to be a virgin when she gets married. Right? If she's not, then it's not considered ideal. Like that. Okay, does that make sense? So that's one thing. Second thing, other thing is that here is Parasara is able to reciprocate. He is able to fulfill her needs. He says, I'll give you a boon. He's able to fulfill it. Right? So she says, okay, then take away the smell and make me smell good. So he can do that without going out and buying a bottle of perfume. Right? Does that make sense? So that means, because then that means that the man, whoever, you know, he marries a girl, he has to be able to take care of her. He has to be able to fulfill the needs of that girl. In other words, you don't marry someone that you can't take care of their needs. Just because you want to marry them is not enough. You have to be able to take care of them. Does that make sense? So the traditional thing is that one is situated, one has facility and all that, then one gets married. Nowadays people get married and then afterwards look for the facility, but it's supposed to be the other way around. Otherwise, how do you take care? Right? In the beginning it's always nice, they interact very nice, but with time they want facility. If you can't provide it, then the relationship starts to break down. Does that make sense? Right? So that's why it's very important. In any case, you want to advance nicely, you know, as a brahmachari, or you want to eventually get married, that unless you can focus, unless you can work, you're not going to impress any girl. Girls are not impressed by lazy boys. They may look good, they may be beautiful, they may have big muscles, they may be cool, tough, dress neat, talk the talk, walk the walk, but if they're lazy, they don't like them. Just the way it is. So that's another thing. You want to be good as a future, as a grihastha, be successful, have your wife respect you. You got to be able to get up, wash your pots, keep your stuff nice and tidy. Women don't like, you know, socks here and there, stuff thrown all over, a mess. You can keep your stuff nice, they respect you. You don't, then they're actually superior to you because they're picking up your stuff. Mothers like to do it because that's their relationship. Wives don't. You know what I'm saying? Because mother is superior, so you're a little kid. Even you're 50 years old, she's 70 years old, you're still a kid. And she still doesn't mind, you know, washing your socks and do this and that, because that's what makes her a mother. But wives aren't like that. You know, they're like equals. So it's like, you know, why is it they're picking up the socks? Does that make sense? So that's the point. If you can't keep your locker nice, you can't keep your clothes nice, you can't do your work, you can't, you know, get involved in politics and all that, you'll never be a good grihastha. Your wife will walk all over you. Right? If you can't wash pots and she can't, she's in charge. You can't clean the house, only she can, she's in charge. Right? If you have to always be taken care of by her and you can't take care of her, then she's in charge. Right? So in the training you see you have older boys are taking care of younger boys, not exploiting them. If you can do that, then it works. If you can respect those superior to you, then the wife and your children will respect you. If you can't respect superiors, then they won't respect you. Make sense? So even though the brahmacharya life is very simple, it's simple because it's the principles upon which your whole rest of your life was based. You know, when you graduate and you go on, then, you know, so many things will become more sophisticated and developed and so many details will be there. But they'll still be based on the same principles that is there in, that is from here. Does that make sense? If you can't respect others, then your family won't respect you. Right? If you can't be clean, they won't be clean. Right? They won't be pure. Right? If you can't maintain, you know, sadhana in that, they won't be able to. If you don't have a work ethic and be able to do work nicely without complaining, it's just normal, it's just the way life is, then they're going to complain about you. Does that make some sense? You know, if you can't control your senses, they won't respect you. Right? Just like little kids, they want anything, they yell and scream, throw tantrums. Do we think that's respectable, or we think, yeah, they're little kids? Okay, so if you're big and you can't control your senses, then what are they going to think you are? Yeah. Does that make sense? So does all this stuff that we're doing make some sense? So now if you want to just remain a brahmachari, doing this will keep your life simple, and you can do this your whole life. This is a trick. If you can be satisfied doing what we're doing here, then you can be a brahmachari your whole life. If you like doing what we're doing here, but you'd like to go out and do more things, you know, then you'll be a good grihastha. But you still have to like and be able to do what we're doing here. Because it's the fundamentals of human life. Does that make some sense? Yeah. And if you do that, then you'll be mature. And it's like this, if you're mature from this age, imagine what you'll be like, you know, 10 years from now or whenever when you get married. Right? Then you'll be really mature. Then your family will really respect you. But if you're just a kid and playing and crazy now, then you're only going to become serious when you're going to get married. So that means than whoever you're married, because girls are serious from about 11, 12 about family life. Right? So that means you get married when you're in your 20s, then that means they're already 10 years ahead of you in maturity. That make sense? So that's, these are why the Vedic system is set up like this, because this is just the way human mentality is. So it looks simple, it looks this, why do we have to do all these things? But this is why. You know? The same exact training makes a first class brahmachari or makes a first class candidate for grihastha ashram. It's the same training. Right? Just like you sit down, it doesn't matter, each one of you is different, but you eat the same food, it makes all of you healthy. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the thing. The Vedic system is so perfect, because it's made by Krishna, that the same system can train it trains first-class brahmacharis. And first-class brahmacharis are of two kinds. Those who will go on, remain naistika brahmacharis, and those who will go on to be mature, responsible grihasthas. Right? Does that make sense? And if you can't do it, then you'll be second grade, third grade, tenth grade brahmachari. Means you'll be second grade, third grade, tenth grade grihastha. Right? And then it'll be difficult for you. Your wife will drive you nuts, your kids will drive you nuts, you'll drive yourself nuts. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah?
There's one point for the same thing. If somebody is, for example, attached to sense gratification, simple activities, because for sense gratification, simple activities arise, then the whole family will be attached to sense gratification and simple activities. And usually the head of the family gets quite a lot of karma from the family, especially the bad karma. Good karma also, but much less than bad karma.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's also mentioned if the head is engaged in sinful things, the dependents will get affected by that. Same way, if the dependents are engaged in it, then whoever's leading gets affected by it. It works both ways.
And you go push down.
Yeah, the whole family gets lost. So it's very important, because the idea is the head of the family is supposed to be a leader, right? Like that. Minimum a leader in your family, of the wife and the family, but also a leader in the community. Like that, because anybody who's mature and responsible is respectable by everybody. Does that make sense? Yeah? So that's where all these things are. It's there, we may not like to do it because we just want to be lazy. We've been at home, our mother will take care of us and all that, because now we're young, we're cute, you know, and that's this and that. When you get a little bit bigger, you get less cute, right? The younger you are, the more cute you are. The older you get, the less cute you are. You noticed? Right? So the mother, you always look nice, but whatever. But as you go, it gets less. So as you get less cute, then they expect you to do more work. Right? Up to this age, for most of you, if you go home, the mother doesn't expect a whole lot of work from you. Right? Some simple stuff, but not a whole lot. They'll feed you, they'll pat you on the head, they'll give you so much affection, which is good. That's what they do. But at the same time, if you think that that's all that you need to do in life, then you got a problem. Because the point is, if you'll notice, you don't find your mothers doing that with your father. Think about it. Right? Your father's responsible and mature, going out and making all the arrangements and this and that. That's why the mother's respecting the father. Right? Yeah. So that's the point. The father's a man. And the guy going home and just being taken care of the mother is the kid. So at some point, the kid has to become a man. Right? Kids aren't respected by mothers, they're taken care of by mothers. Right? Men are respected by mothers. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. You're going to marry a wife, not a mother. Right? She'll be somebody else's mother, but not your mother. Does that make sense? Yeah? So this is reality. Right? Does this make sense? So that's why we're always telling you, when you're here, do nicely and this and that. And when you go home, it's fine. You go home, your mother's nice, she feeds you nice, she does all special things for you. That's great. That's what mothers are supposed to do. Right? And you feel good because your mother's there, she has affection for it. But if then after that you come back here and wonder, how come it's not like that here? I go home, I don't have to work. Why do I have to work here? You know? Then you miss the point. Because at one point you have to become a man. So is that going to be happening while you're sitting at home? It's going to happen here. It's going to happen in the association of men. Right here, or out preaching, or traveling, or, you know, in that situation. Right? Boys become men by association with men. Right? How does milk become yogurt? By association with what? Milk? Yogurt. That's the point. Got it? So there's no problem in going home. But the problem is you develop the mentality, you think that's the way the whole world is and is going to be, but it's not. Your mother's protecting you. She's caring for you. So therefore, it's so nice for you. But the reality is, the world's not so nice. So you have to learn to become mature so you can deal with that world. And so you can make it nice for your family. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay? So like that, you should all, it doesn't matter your age, you can be as mature as you can be. You know, we may like it, we may not like to do it, but it has to be done. Right? You have to eat, so we have to cook. To cook, we have to prepare things, we have to order it. Right? We have to keep things clean, we have to wash pots, we have to cook, we have to set up, we have to eat, we have to clean up. That's just life. If you look in your house, that's what your mother does. Right? Does that make sense? So now if you can do that, that means you're independent. And if you're independent, then you'll be respected by women. But if only they can do it, you can't do it, then they're superior to you. Does that make sense? If they're superior to you, will they respect you? No. Why be with a woman who doesn't respect you? Right? Because she's not your mother. Who doesn't respect but will take care of you. Right? Who you marry expects you're going to take care of them. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's reality. So these are all things you can learn from this. Right? Vasudeva, he was good because Parasa was a great sage. Right? And focused on his duty and responsible. And the girl is chaste. So then you're going to get a good child. Does that make sense? Like that. So therefore, Vyasadeva worked out. So this is not the example of how to conceive a child. This is an example. Here you get the example of what is the proper mentality of a girl and certain elements of the boy. So the idea is in one story you don't get everything. You know, this will give one point, another aspect of the story, the thing will be. That's why it's so big, voluminous. There's only a few points to make, right? But if we give it all at once, then it becomes bogged down, and like, you know, like now you've been talking, no story is happening, right? So your boys, you can listen to the philosophy and this and that and reasons behind, right? The question is, well, how is it that worked? But girls don't ask that kind of question. So if the story stops, they get bored. You can say one sentence, two sentences, and then move on. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. So that's why only a little bit's put in this story. Then the next story, a little bit more is put in. You know, like here we had the next story. We have by the thing is that the mountain is misbehaving with the girl. He can't be misbehaving. The king has to correct that. Girls cannot be unprotected in his kingdom. Right? So this mountain was harassing the river. Right? That's not allowed. Right? If it's proper arrangement, everything like that, it's okay. But if not, it's not allowed. Yeah?
Mountains could move and grow.
Mountains, they have their personality. You know, some of them, they're people. So some of them are powerful enough they can take human form. So the river is also like that. But whatever it is, just the potencies are there.
Would the mountain of the mountain, river, or whatever, Are they a citizen of the city, like a person?
It means it's the king's business to protect everything within in the boundaries of his kingdom. You know, even down to the plants and animals. You know, people aren't taking care of something. You know, they're having animals, but not taking care of the animals. And that's the king's business to see that that's corrected. You know what I'm saying? If they're doing it nicely, he doesn't get involved. It's not, he doesn't have to tell them how to raise the animals. If they're doing it wrong, then... Does that make sense? So the king is responsible for all that. So you see that there. Then you see it's between his own personal needs and then the needs of the forefathers who are superior to him. There is, you know, the previous, you know, generations before him. Then that duty is higher than this duty. Right? Because the forefathers, they want a son. But they're asking for something else, so they're taking that as higher. So therefore, the needs of our superiors are more important than our own needs. Does that make sense? So that's something here, because you can't say more. Here, he wants to have a child. So you can't get more of a personal need than that, but even that is put aside for the needs of superior. Does that make sense? So that's the principle, so we can gain that from here. Right?
Yeah.
Depends upon who they are. You know what I'm saying? You only go to Goloka if you're a devotee. If you're not a devotee, you don't go there. And they go to, and then they go to Pitri. That's if they're pious. If they're impious, then they go to Patal Loka.
What do they do in Pitri?
Pitri Loka, it's like kind of like a heavenly planet. It's connected with Yamaraja's court and the moon. So there's some connection between them. So they go there for 10,000 years. So there's some, you know, heavenly enjoyments like that. Not as much as it's not the same level as Indra's planets and all those heavenly planets. But still it's heavenly planets, Pitri. And even if they do go there, they're still, you know, you still respect them. Like that. Does that make sense? In a sense, so there's all kinds of things within it to gain from it. Okay, and then we see another thing is that the son, even though he's going away, that if the mother needs something, then he'll come and take care. Right? He wants to go away to the forest for austerity, so he's doing that. But if the mother needs something, he'll take care of it. You know, and then when it's done, he'll go. So he's not bound by the affection, but he's not, avoiding the needs. You understand? Does that make sense? So his duty, he comes, he takes care, and this and that. But when the care is taken care of, then that's it. He doesn't, beyond that, out of sentiment, continue. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's also a balance that's to be gained.
Of yesterday of leaving, was that Vanaprastha or
sannyas? It's just as a tyagi, because we see he gets married and all that. You know, so he's a Brahmin just going to the forest for austerities like that, and then later on he'll get married and like that. But it's not sannyas, you know. It's not exactly vanaprastha. It's kind of it's just living in the forest. You know, Brahmins that live in, ascetics like that. They just live in the forest. So ascetics might be brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprastha, sannyas. Maybe any of the four, like that. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.